This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Reverend Richard Cizik, was described in an LA Times article last September as one of the new evangelicals, part of, quote, a slightly younger, considerably less pugnacious, and less reflexively Republican generation of conservative leaders bidding to dislodge familiar faces such as Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, James Dobson, and Richard Land. Cizik is the vice president for government affairs of the National Association of Evangelicals, an umbrella group that represents over 50 denominations and over 40,000 churches. The NAE is the group that was headed by Ted Haggard, who resigned last month after a gay escort alleged that Haggard paid him for sex. My guest, Reverend Cizik, has been controversial because he is one of the leaders in a new evangelical movement to address global warming, a movement that has been criticized by several top evangelical leaders. Richard Cizik, welcome to Fresh Air. Why have you taken on global warming as an issue?
Thank you, Terry. It's a delight to be with you. Why have I taken it on? Well, I suppose I had a conversion to the facts of climate change back in 2002 and decided I had to at least do something. I felt compelled, not unlike a Christian conversion to Christ, I should do something about what he owns, that is the earth, and attempt to save it, if you will, from environmental destruction, as I understand and still do today that climate change is opposed to this earth. That is potential destruction, not just of biodiversity, but of life as we know it. So I took it on. And, well, it's been quite a ride.
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to that in a second. But what was your conversion experience?
I was invited by friends to go to an Oxford conference on climate change in 2002, went begrudgingly, said, don't expect anything from it. Look, the science is disputable. This doesn't make a claim on me or the time of the NAE, and so I'll go, but don't expect much to come from it. And, well, I confronted the science, the best science of the world that was presented there, evangelical beliefs as they were presented to me by scientists who are men and women of faith, and I had a conversion. That is to say, I turned around, I went a different direction than I'd been going, and decided to proclaim the new truth as I understood it, and that's what I've been doing since.
Right, and as you say, you decided to go in a different direction, and as part of that, you helped draft the Environmental Climate Initiative, which was signed last spring, I believe, by how many evangelical leaders?
Well, it's about 100 evangelical leaders that have signed thus far, and we'd take more, but we don't think we need them. What we want instead are not their signatures, but their lives. That is, evangelical leaders, pastors, lay people of all kinds, college students and others, we want their lives. We want them to commit themselves as a form of Christian discipleship to advancing this concern, namely that climate change and all that it encompasses, the care of the earth, creation care as we call it, is something that God makes a claim on them for, right in the scriptures, and they've got to act on this, and that's our message. It's a very biblical message, and we've attempted to find a biblical idiom, if you will, to communicate it.
Okay, so you helped draft this Environmental Climate Initiative, but you never signed it yourself.
Well, originally I did, yes. I not only encouraged others to and put my John Hancock, as it were, on the document, but was forced to take it off.
What forced you to take it off?
25 leaders who wrote to the NAE saying this is not a consensus issue about which the NAE should concern itself, and moreover, they didn't want officials of the NAE speaking as if they spoke for all evangelicals. So in an attempt to build a bridge to not retreat myself, but by simply taking my name off the list, I sought to bring others on it, and that's been my goal ever since. But I was forced to take it off because I was speaking out of turn, I was told.
And among the leaders who signed that statement asking you to not add global warming to your list of issues, among the leaders were Charles Colson, the founder of Prison Fellowship Ministries, James Dobson, the founder of Focus on the Family, who's widely considered to be the most powerful leader on the religious right, and Richard Land, who's the president of Ethics and Religious Liberty at the Southern Baptist Convention. So those are some pretty high-powered people. The letter said, "We have appreciated the bold stance the National Association of Evangelicals has taken on controversial issues, like embracing a culture of life, protecting traditional marriage and family. We respectfully request, however, that the NAE not adopt any official position on the issue of global climate change. Global warming is not a consensus issue." What does that mean?
It means an issue about which all evangelicals have come to a consensus on, either on the science or what to do about it, and therefore, knowing NAE's history, they made the appeal that we shouldn't join the effort.
And
I thought they were wrong then. I think they're wrong now. But I took my name off the list in order to be a consensus builder, and a great deal of consensus has emerged since that time over a year ago.
What's changed?
Well, not only have some major voices in our community come out saying that it's real, we've got to do something about it. People such as Pat Robertson, we didn't expect him to have a conversion on this, but he did. And thousands of pastors around the country have arisen to say, you're right, this is a biblical issue. It's not a secular, blue state, Democrat, liberal, environmentalist kind of an issue. This is a people issue, even, if you will, a family issue. And so, while we're not entirely all on board at this point, I think there's begrudging admission even from the critics that some things have changed in this world. Not just the loss of biodiversity that we know is occurring on a daily basis, but, well, there are human events such as hurricanes, floods, droughts, all these combining together to present, I think, a picture to not just evangelicals, but all people in the world that we're dealing now with something that we've never confronted before in human history. And we've got to do so with all our best minds, hearts, and yes, our very lives.
I would like to know if you feel like you understand why some evangelical leaders like James Dobson are so opposed to trying to stop global warming. They're so opposed to taking global warming seriously. I mean, do you think that they're anti-science? Are they concerned about corporate profits? Do they just not believe it's happening? There's so many different reasons that people have speculated about. I'd like to know what you think. What do you think is the real reason behind that?
It's hard to say. I think it differs per individual. I was advised by our former president that he said, when asked,
the former president
of the
NAE.
Of the NAE.
Yeah.
What it was, he said, Rich, it's that they're not saying it. You're saying it. And I said, no, wait a minute. If I could get them to say it, would that make a difference? He said, yes. So that's what I've sought to do. In other words, to win these leaders and others over to this cause with the compelling science. Most of all, though, with the biblical arguments, because these are the least objectionable to evangelicals. There are lots of reasons the aforementioned individuals didn't want NAE to take this on, fear that we might be co-opted by liberals, that this would endanger the incumbent president and his political power if evangelicals were to come on board. A lot of different reasons. But the most fundamental of all reasons that they have to come on board, it's so compelling, beyond the science itself, is the Bible itself. And it's that authority which I appeal to. So I'm not about a political game here. I'm not a voice for the Democrats, least of all. But I am a voice, I think, for what God is saying. And heaven is God's throne, and the earth is his footstool, according to the prophet Isaiah.
The Reverend Joel Hunter was the president-elect of the Christian Coalition, but he stepped down, saying that the group was resisting his effort to broaden the group's agenda so that it could include poverty and global warming, and the board didn't support him in that. Do you think that this split on global warming is representative of a larger split in the evangelical movement now about what the priorities should be?
Yeah, I think there is a tussle, an internal tussle going on over what the priorities ought to be. I try not to emphasize the divisions because I'm accused of being divisive, and I'm really not being divisive. I'm simply calling us to a broader agenda. But is there a tussle going on for what ought to be the future of this movement? Absolutely. Is there almost a generational split? Yes, because the younger generation I hardly need to even make a case for. They instinctively know that this is what they have to be about. They know that this earth is what they'll live in for 2 score, 3 score, and 7 or whatever, and they've got to take care of it. It's the older generation, sometimes the old guard, so to speak, that objects. But I found it's really not either about age, per se. It's about having this worldview that says, well, all of these things matter, and people are going to be called to different struggles. I commend and applaud those that are called to the struggle to protect the family. I'm myself pro-life. I'm a conservative. So I commend them. But I also say, don't attack those who choose to do the other or deny them what is their God-given calling to do that.
Well, let me ask you a question. You were saying earlier that fierce hurricanes might be among the consequences of global warming, and we have to pay attention to that. I recently spoke with Pastor John Hagee, who has a megachurch and is a pretty major evangelical leader. And he had told his congregation in one of his sermons that Hurricane Katrina was really God's retribution for a planned gay pride parade in New Orleans and for behavior reminiscent of Sodom and Gomorrah. And I asked him about that on our show, and he said, all hurricanes are acts of God because God controls the heavens, and I believe that New Orleans had a level of sin that was offensive to God, and they are recipients of the judgment of God for that. How do you react to a statement like that?
There are those, you see, who have a hyper-Calvinism that assigns even global climate change to God. This, I think, is a kind of Calvinism that I don't buy into. And they're more than willing, out of dispensational theology, to simply wash their hands of what's occurring in the earth. And they have a kind of social apathy born of a kind of terminal pessimism. And I think that that's unbiblical, too. In other words, that the world must sink into depravity before Christ's return, and frankly, all these interventions, nuclear war or hurricanes, trying to solve them is futile at best, and at worst, for some of those in that school of thought, such efforts are perceived as satanic secularism because it holds up that which God is doing in the world. This is not biblical. I'm astonished that some people believe this, but it's not really right interpretation of Scripture as far as I'm concerned. In other words, we can't sit on our Western affluence and simply wash our hands of what's occurring in the world because, well, it may be part of God's plan. God doesn't allow that. It may be that Christ will return only when the world is forsaken all goodness, but will he find the world's condition then in spite of or because of the church's witness?
My guest is Reverend Richard Cizik, Vice President of the National Association of Evangelicals. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Reverend Richard Cizik. He's the Vice President for Governmental Affairs of the National Association of Evangelicals. Your group, the National Association of Evangelicals, is the group that Ted Haggard was president of from 2003 until earlier in 2006 when he stepped down after the scandal surrounding allegations that he paid for the services of a gay prostitute, Mike Jones. And Haggard has admitted to hiring Jones, but says it was only for massages. And he admits to purchasing methamphetamine, but says he threw it away and never used it. What was your reaction when you found this out?
Well, utter shock. I was actually on the phone with reporters from Newsweek doing a cover story on the Jesus movement. Utter shock. I just couldn't believe it.
Did you have any idea that he was involved in this kind of behavior, like hiring?
No. No, it was just it's mind-boggling. I had no advance warning, much less information, and so I was dumbstruck. I know we're all fallen. We all have feet of clay, and so that's been my attitude since, to offer compassion and forgiveness. In fact, sent Ted an email he had sent to me saying, please forgive me. And I'd said, you're forgiven, my friend. God forgives and calls us to forgive others, and you certainly are. But that was, just total shock.
What impact is it having on your group?
I don't think that most people interpret it as an institutional problem. It was the falling of a leader, a fine person otherwise, and person who I've loved, Ted Haggard. I am called to love all people, and I love and still do Ted. But this is, I think, a personal tragedy, not an institutional scandal per se, and that's how it's been interpreted. I haven't gotten a single letter from a single church saying, well, we're going to withdraw from the NAE. I haven't had that happen. We liken it to a plane crash. Planes now and then do crash, but people the next day still get on planes. That's because they know things happen. And, well, this was one man's failure. Millions of evangelicals go to church. Millions of Americans, one-third of all Americans, actually attend an evangelical church every Sunday. 33% do. And they still will. But they know, we all do, that leaders fail at times.
Three evangelical leaders, and each the head of a megachurch, had to step down this year because of gay relationships. And I'm wondering what that says to you.
Well, it doesn't cause me to change my convictions, but I think it does cause me to speak out for compassion, as have others. I think it says we ought not to be pointing our fingers, recognizing, frankly, that every time you do point your finger at somebody else, there are three pointing back. So if we have a reputation as evangelicals for being judgmental, well, maybe this should help us to be less so. And in fact, look in the circumstances for some healing between these two communities that have so often been at odds, that is the gay community and evangelicals. I'm not going to change my biblical convictions about whether homosexuality is sin, but I can certainly, as an evangelical, consider my attitudes and what they've been, and maybe these events will cause people to do that. They would me. They have me. I think that the evolution of American evangelicalism is not just to a broader engagement on all the issues, poverty and hunger, environmentalism, as well as traditional family and the sanctity of life. We've become known, by the way, as the new internationalists, to quote Nick Kristof from the New York Times, engaged on sex trafficking, religious freedom, all these issues. So it's an expansion not just of our agenda that we need to be about, but we need to be about a different methodology of politics per se, rejecting the kind of wedge politics that have divided Americans, and be about healing. And not just between people who happen to disagree party-wise, but between communities who share different, very different values.
I don't mean to sound presumptuous here, but is it possible that perhaps the fact that three evangelical leaders had to step down from their positions because of gay relationships that they had, is that perhaps reason to reconsider your position on homosexuality? And here's what I'm thinking. Again, I don't mean this to be presumptuous. I just wanted to, like, raise this as something we could talk about. Mm-hmm. It's possible that these are three people who are just gay. I mean, they just are. And
yes, that's conceivable.
And that by trying to deny that, they basically drove their impulses, they repressed their impulses and then kind of, like, drove them into this underground world because on some level, there was, like, no denying what their real sexual orientation was. But because it was so repressed, it came out mm-hmm. in this kind of underground, underworld kind
yes.
of way. And,
well, that
and you could argue, gosh, opinion. It would have been so much healthier to have, like, an above-ground, loving, caring, open, honest relationship that, you know, would be life-affirming.
Well, I'm not willing to go there. I'm willing to say, though, that as evangelical Christians, we have to speak clearly to say that not just heterosexual affairs outside of marriage as well as homosexual relationships are sinful. In other words, I'm not going to depart from my understanding of the Bible's teaching about immorality, which can be heterosexual or homosexual, but I can say that this ought not to be a sin so great that one, people can't be forgiven or can't be welcomed into the church because of it. But that's the message that millions have gotten, namely that we are self-righteous people who sin not, and therefore don't come to church unless you're perfect. That's a sin in itself. It's called pride.
Are you concerned that, although you see this as a personal issue and not an issue that reveals or reflects anything about the larger group, the National Association of Evangelicals, are you concerned that Reverend Haggard's problem will be seen as hypocrisy that reflects on the larger movement?
Sure. Anybody who would deny that would be living in a dream world. We're all, as Christians, held up to a pretty tough standard. It's the standard of Jesus. And especially when we speak out against others' sin, as evangelicals are wont to do, sexual sins, it can't help but be perceived as hypocrisy when we ourselves fail. So, I'm concerned about that. I rather think that if anybody thinks there isn't sin in the church, they don't know the church.
Reverend Richard Cizik is a vice president of the National Association of Evangelicals. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Reverend Richard Cizik, vice president of the National Association of Evangelicals. He heads the group's lobbying effort. He's been at the forefront of the evangelical movement to address global warming. We were talking about speculation over the reasons why some evangelical leaders have opposed your taking a stand on global warming. And, you know, one reason that has been speculated on is this, that an amendment to ban gay marriage or, anti-abortion measures are much better at rallying the base than, say, global warming, which is a more like scientifically complicated issue. It doesn't kind of hit people's gut in the same way as, you know, rallying the base on anti-gay issues. Do you think there's any truth to that?
Oh, for sure. In other words, there are political types in this town, elected politicians and others, who want to use our community for our votes, quickly abandon us after they get those votes, and care not really for what we as evangelicals care or should care the most about, namely the things of God. And so, knowing the fact that we get used, we should be more careful. And most of all, examine what are God's agendas.
Now, in the midterm elections, I forget exactly what the statistics were, but more evangelical voters voted Democrat than they did in recent elections. And I'm wondering how you interpret that.
Well, not only did more evangelicals vote for Democrats, but more evangelicals as a whole voted from 23 million up to 24 million. Mm-hmm. And then in individual races, between 6 and 16% evangelicals voted this time for Democrats. In other words, there were these 6 to 16% of evangelicals who voted Democratic this time who didn't vote that way last time. And my interpretation is that they were, one, sounding out against the war in Iraq. I think that was clear. And secondly, they were sounding out against corruption. And they were saying, we've got to clean up this mess. And only lastly would they have been voting, I think, for some of these other concerns, which I think are very important, such as creation care and the environment. But hopefully in the future, both parties will consider our concerns on these counts.
Now, you are the head of the lobbying arm of the National Association of Evangelicals. So what are your priorities in terms of legislation?
On an environmental level, I'd like to see a cap on CO2 emissions in some kind of a stewardship. It was previously called the Climate Stewardship Act, appropriate word, especially for evangelical Christians. I'd like to see action, in other words, of that score, but on a host of issues that range from global poverty to the sanctity of life, I'm looking to find some creative solutions that transcend the normal political boundaries.
Like what? Give me an example of a creative solution.
Well, evangelicals have been railing against abortion for years. The question is, what are we going to do about it? Not just spin or talk about it, but genuinely seek to address the issues that women have that are often rooted in poverty or other concerns that lead them to make these choices. And we have to look creatively as evangelicals at a new world. It's a new century, and do so in ways that transcend political boundaries. And often transcend political solutions. So while it's true I do work here in Washington, do lobby, if you will, don't use that word usually, but there are those kinds of things you have to work for in the political system, because you have to not only have a personal testimony, as evangelicals are good at, but you have to have good analysis, and then you have to have policy solutions to go with them. So we have to find answers that we've never had before to problems that we've never even considered before. And these have to be rooted, I think, in good political analysis as well as a bipartisan approach. And that's a challenge. Evangelicals have simply said, well, give it to them, the Republicans, to solve. Well, have now discovered, well, the Republicans weren't so intent at all about solving some of those problems, in which case maybe we should begin anew. Well,
begin anew and not challenge. Be as strongly affiliated with one party?
No, absolutely. We shouldn't put all of our eggs in one basket. It makes no political sense. Besides, we're not a party team here. The evangelicals aren't, God's own party at prayer. That's not what it stands for. We are people who should transcend political parties, who are interested in solving problems. Because, frankly, a lot of the problems that we face in the world today are rooted in spiritual realities that require and necessitate our engagement on. You can't solve problems of poverty without addressing the spiritual. You can't even address problems of climate change without addressing what it means spiritually. Even E.O. Wilson, the evolutionary biologist from Harvard, who I now count as a friend, a colleague on these issues, says it's called creation, which implies those who haven't been engaged need to be engaged. So that's what I'm talking about here.
Will you be preaching on Christmas or Christmas Eve?
I have been previously so, and I am happy to say that this year I am with my family, probably taking in a service that somebody else leads. But it is a favorite to go to a Christmas Eve service, yes, with my two boys and wife, Jenny.
What do you like to do on Christmas when you're not working?
I like to sit around a fire and listen to Christmas music, all kinds, traditional hymns, Silent Night, Holy Night, as well as contemporary artists such as James Taylor. He has this incredible DVD of Christmas music, and I love to listen to that.
Well, I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and a very happy and healthy New Year.
Thank you, Terry, and the same to you.
Reverend Richard Cizik is the National Association of Evangelicals Vice President for Governmental Affairs.